Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Labyrinth time. Getting in the groove. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. Today, Wednesday, the 23rd of June, the year is 2010, and I am Margaret Marshall, and I want to welcome you to the backyard and hope that we're going to have a lot of you joining the Labrish this evening. And as I always like to do, I'll tell our visitors who are on the board who might not be Jamaican or know much about the Jamaican culture, that a labrish is when we get together to talk about something of interest, and we all put our little two cents in and perhaps learn more about the subject. And we have some exciting subjects. We have an exciting subject this evening. Because if you are on my list, you will know that, as usual, I'm always celebrating something wonderful about the wonderful culture of Jamaica. Because that is the whole purpose of this show, is to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve. And we try to do a little bit of both. We try to enlighten people that might not know. I know for me, there's so much I didn't know before I started this research, because when I was growing up in Jamaica in the 40s and 50s, there was not a lot of information on certain things, especially, you know, history of that we're discussing here now. So I find it very, very enlightening when I am doing a little research on whatever the topic is. And this evening, if you are not on my email list, you will know that we're talking about the celebrities who made Jamaica their home in the 40s and 50s and perhaps 60s. Now, there are a lot of them. You know, I'm just going to be discussing three tonight because there's a special reason, too, because they were there around the time that I was growing up. So the information I'm going to be sharing is captured in the or documented in Pieces of the Past, which is a wonderful segment of the Gleaner Company's archive. So anyone who would like to just learn more history about things about Jamaica, that is a wonderful website for you to go to. And if you just Google Pieces of the Past, you will get to the Gleaner Company's site. And the Daily Gleaner in Jamaica is an old, old newspaper. I think we've done a show on it already, but if not, we'll certainly be doing that. So again, this is Margaret Marshall. I hope that you are settled in your favorite chair. If you have been to Jamaica, you know how beautiful it is in the evenings. If you were on the beach, the sun would be going down and you could have a beautiful view. If you were a native and lived, you might be on your veranda or under your favorite tree. So I'm going to ask you to pretend that you're there and you can feel the warm, balmy breezes just blowing across your face. You know, we have the trade winds that come by there every evening. So we who grew up there sort of looked forward to it because I don't know about where you're listening from tonight, but I am in Hotlanta, H-O-T. Atlanta. So it's very, very hot here and humid. But one thing for sure, we know that the summer is going to be short as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, let's talk about what we're going to talk about this evening. And I'm going to be reading just briefly from Pieces of the Past because I love good writers and, you know, the way people put things together always intrigue me. And this segment that you would research is the caption on it is Captivated by Jamaica. Never have I seen a land so beautiful. Everywhere there is a blanket of green so thick that the earth never shows through. And that is a quote by Errol Flynn in a piece he wrote, which is My Wicked, Wicked Ways. It might have been a biography, I don't know. And that was written in 1976. So wrote the handsome movie star after his arrival in Jamaica, courtesy of a 1946 storm. Over the years, the island's compelling natural beauty has cast more than one famous foreigner to put down roots in her tropical soil. In addition to Flynn, there were the world-renowned writers. Ian Fleming, creator of the debonair British spy James Bond, and Noel Coward, playwright and bon vivant extraordinaire, all three fell victim to Jamaica's dynamic charms, and all three were peers living in Jamaica during the same time period. And boy, did they have a ball together. So I think Errol Flynn went there first. And of course, because all these were sort of in the same industry, you know how it is, birds of a feather hang together. So I am assuming that it was because of him why the other two ended up there. But one thing it didn't say here is what 1946 storm caused Errol Flynn to be there. So if anyone on the board can fill me in on that, it would help everybody. Did we have a storm in 1946? Well, you know me, I'm a senior citizen, so although I do the shows and I've done so much material in the last 2 years that I am not sure. So I'm waiting for a hand if anyone can verify that. But as I mentioned, this is all written. I'm reading verbatim from the pieces of the past. Now they're discussing Noel Coward, who was born in 1899. A friend of Ian Fleming and Errol Flynn, British-born playwright, songwriter, and actor Noel Coward first visited Jamaica on a two-week holiday in 1944. He was 43 years old, an accomplished playwright with dozens of plays to his credit, and an Oscar nomination for Best Writer for the film In Which We Served, which was a film from 1942. Now, Coward quickly fell in love with Jamaica as he returned to rent Fleming's Golden Eye in 1948. That's a place that I'm not familiar with also. So anybody on the board want to elaborate about where that is? And I am assuming it's in the Port Antonio area, because that's where Errol Flynn had his place. But anyway, I'm reading again. On that trip, he was determined to claim a piece of his dream island for his own and settled on a slope 10 miles away from Goldeneye with a magical view of the sea. Coward met with an architect and began building his Jamaican retreat, which was named Blue Harbor. A year later, he returned to his two-story villa, now staffed with a chambermaid, a chauffeur, and several gardeners, and boasting a saltwater swimming pool at the sea's edge. How cool is that? Now, by the 1950s, when Coward turned his talent to cabaret performances and gained a new generation of admirers, a steady string of guests began to appear, socialites and dignitaries, writers and actors, including Sir Laurence Olivier, Vivian Leigh, David Niven, and the older people can relate to those movie stars. I don't know about the young folks. But Katharine Hepburn, Mary Martin, I mean, all these people visited Blue Harbor, of course. I don't remember hearing about them coming, but, you know, communication was a lot different in those days. But all of these, including, Alec Guinness and Patricia Neal, and of course Errol Flynn and his wife Patricia Waymore. All of those people visited Blue Harbor. Now today, Errol Flynn's wife remembers those times as very relaxed and peaceful, and they were all blessed. All of these people, you know, big movie stars at the time, were so glad to get to Blue Harbor to be away from the paparazzi. So, you know, we know how the paparazzi really bug the stars now. So it just shows you that, you know, it's been going on for a long time. I don't know if it was at the volume that it is now. Anyway, that's what the article here is saying. And again, I'm waiting on a hand for the Labrish about if anyone know the location of any of these places, or if anyone knew what was going on then. I know I certainly didn't. Oh, I see a raised hand. So I'm going to open up the mic to 718-379. You got
yes.
Mark in the backyard. Who do I have? Tell the world.
Evelay in the Bronx.
Home of the Yankees.
New York Yankees.
Oh, I'm sorry. New York Yankees. I'm going to get it right one of these days, Mr. Lee from the Bronx. How are you today?
Yeah, well, you know, Blue Harbor was a sort of a compound in around the Port Maria Bay area. And the way this place was set up with seaside bungalows and stuff like that was almost like what they now have. You know, you could rent bungalows all along the tourist areas in Jamaica, the North Coast.
Mm.
But this area was very secluded with a lot of trees. Sometimes you pass by there. I've been in that area maybe about 5 years ago. You would know that the kind of houses and bungalows are behind those trees. You know, it's very mysterious. And it falls in line with who these people really are, who they portray to be. That they're writers, and as you said before, they want to be away from the maddening crowd, except their contemporaries, and you named quite a few of them. So, but this got a little too hot for Coward's liking, so he built a new place just above where you were talking about this compound in Blue Harbor. And he built a place all for himself, a place called Firefly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is now a museum if anyone cares to check it out. And it's also where he is laid to rest. It's his gravesite.
Oh.
So, very exclusive place. But I would like you to know that in between these celebrities, what's his name? Ian Fleming and Noah Coward was our own Chris Blackwell. You know, he had a house right in the middle of them. So, you know, he turned out...
Tell me about Chris Blackwell.
Well, Chris Blackwell is known to Jamaicans as one of the critiques of everything that is hobnob or elite or whatever. And he was the guy, I think, that... at the end of the year, he used to critique all of the celebrities about what they, the worst dressed people.
Oh, I see.
For him.
And he lived there during their times?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Well, you know, he had a very rich wife.
Mm. Now, this is, he was a Jamaican?
He was a Jamaican of English parents.
I got you. But he was born there. Because all of these three people were, let's call them imports or whatever, expatriate, not really. But they were from another country.
Well, in that period of time, that area was one of the most exclusive areas for people in this profession, the acting profession, and playwrights and actors, you know.
Right.
And they felt comfortable going there because all their peers were somewhere there, but not necessarily. They were there not to be seen by the maddening crowd.
Right. And I suppose that's why, I mean, people like living in Kingston or perhaps the media did not announce their arrival. It wasn't a big thing, you know, like when they were coming and even that they were there.
Don't forget the Santa Galena now. The Santa Galena, as much as possible, would chronicle or document who they thought was there. And some of these people, if they stepped out, you know, they would go to... functions here and there, and the reporters were waiting, and they would always Santa Galena would always had a celebrity page.
Mm-hmm.
And you would see these names flashing by. Yeah, so I you know, if you were a movie buff or if you had a star like Errol Flynn hanging around the place, the Santa Galena would sort of tell you who was visiting at his house while he was either there or filming somewhere else.
Right. The difference is to now is that then, during then, even if that was publicized, there would not be, you know, a host of people going by to see them or bug them or photograph them.
It wasn't possible.
Am I correct?
Yeah, that's right.
So they felt safe and secure and comfortable you know, just hanging out.
The kind of writing that they did for their plays and stuff, this was the ideal setting for, if there's a common thread with all the three people that you mentioned, aside from being friends, they were, you know, they wrote their own plays and newsletters. Fleming himself was a manager of a newspaper in England while he would be working in Jamaica.
Right, right, right. Well, I see a few more facts here about Noel Coward that the Jamaica article had, Pieces of the Past had, that I thought was quite interesting. In 1965, he was one of the first men to undergo plastic surgery. Ain't that something? He turned down some roles that brought much acclaim to other actors. You know, the leading actor in My Fair Lady and The King and I. He was offered all those roles before.
Yeah. Well,
but,
you know, I have a little theory about Noel Coward.
Uh-huh.
And since this is a closed circuit, maybe I can just allude to it, that at the age of 14, he became the protege and probably the lover of this guy, Philip Straightfield.
Yep. Uh-huh.
This
yeah.
guy was a spider painter.
Mm-hmm.
And he later died, and his friend, Straightfield's friend, sort of adopted Noel Coward and introduced him to all of these
high society folks.
Yeah. And then what was also interesting along these lines, you all have to read in between the lines here, that he had his private secretary for 40 years was a male secretary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But also I'd like to point out that, you know, he was encouraged by his ambitious mother, who sent him to the Dance Academy in London. So that's how he got his first exposure. So it seems to me like his mother was not only ambitious, she was also smart, because she might have known his tendencies. Because in those days, you know, I suppose for a man to be sent to dancing school was not very common.
Right.
You see where I'm coming from with this?
But he was extremely talented
in whatever he did.
And he did very well at the dancing school and made all kinds of connections and started to write his own plays where he would dance and stuff like that.
Right.
His father was not all that interested in any of this. He was a piano salesman, and so let that be. But his mother, as you say, was a lot more ambitious and saw the potential in him for becoming something.
And I always like to relate some of these things that we bring up, you know, in celebration of our island, how it can relate to today and, you know, us and the future generation. And what I see here, you know, first of all, he had to be successful or he couldn't be buying a place in Jamaica and building a place in Jamaica even then. But in order for him to get to where he was when he, you know, fell in love with Jamaica, he had a whole lot of support behind him, starting off with his mother and, as you said, meeting the socialite and being introduced. But what I read in most of the things about him is his drive and determination. That's how he dabbled into everything. He wrote his plays, he acted in some of them, he directed, he sang, he acted, he danced, he did everything.
And he wasn't bashful in selling himself.
How many people can relate to that? You know, the point is, if you have a passion for something, even if you're not great at it, I mean, it's practicing at it and doing it all the time and having people to encourage you about it, that really makes it happen. That's what I saw as I read about him. And, you know, that's what I can relate to the now. And hopefully, you know, the listeners can relate to that too. Or I'm always asking, if you have a comment, listeners, please just raise your hands and join the Labrish here. Because, you know, I always think that, you know, we're so interconnected as human beings. And all the people we have highlighted, both current ones and ones from way before our times, that's what's really the common thread in them, or one of them, is that it was persistence, it was practice, it was, you know, not giving up, it was having an idea and working it.
Yeah. You know, there's another aspect to him coming to Jamaica, too. It's not that he loved the place. There's no doubt about it. But he owed a lot of money to the taxman in England.
Well, isn't that the same thing that's going on now? People are running off to other countries because they don't want to pay the one they owe?
Well, he had houses in Bermuda and Switzerland as well as Jamaica. And this is to evade taxes.
Right. So in other words, you know, it's what's going on now is old.
Of course. I mean, look, nobody wants to pay up or settle with a taxman if he doesn't have to, right? They just caught about 20 people in Switzerland who have been, I mean, this is not related to Jamaica, but the same idea of sending your funds over to Switzerland, offshore, in other words.
Right.
They just got about 20 people owing a whole lot of money to the U.S. government.
What do you mean? So, you know, he had his stage debut at age 11. But I did, you know, in his biography, he wrote something about why he answered. It was some simple ad. Did you see that, Lay, someplace? A little advertisement appeared in the Daily Mirror. It stated that a talented boy of attractive appearance was required by Miss Lillefields to appear in her production of a play.
Yeah, this was earlier on when he was going to go into children's plays.
Right. So that's really what he got his first start with. You know, appearing in that.
Yeah.
So you know, there's a lot of lessons in a person's life. You see and hear about their success, but you know, it's the little things put together that sometimes causes the big success.
Yeah.
You know, and they made a mark on the world, or we wouldn't be talking about them. But everything has a start. You know, you got to start someplace. And sometimes it's just a little start. That's the point I was trying to make.
Yeah.
So, you know that he was very involved during the war period. You know.
And that's another thread that ties him in with Ian Fleming, who was also involved in
the war. Right. Yeah.
We'd call them war correspondents, but... He had a very Coward had a very cynical job. He had an office in Paris, in France, and he ran a propaganda bureau right there in Paris.
Right.
In World War II.
Well, you know, all both sides usually do it. You have to have the propaganda to try and win the people over.
You have to have the right person to do it.
Right. So, do you know he was on the Germans' blacklist that if he was caught, he should be killed?
Yeah.
You know, don't even take him as a prisoner of war. Just kill him.
Yeah.
So, but I just find all of those little, you know, information, nuggets of really wisdom, you know, because it's so much, a lot of it is similar to what is happening today.
Yeah.
He was only 14 when you mentioned that he, you know, got involved with that painter. Was he a painter you mentioned?
Definitely, yeah.
Right, right. So, you know, each one of them have a real fascinated story. At this time, I'd like to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock where we just labrish about something that related to Jamaican culture that we like to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve. And we're using this format because if you know, it's in cyberspace forever, and I would like to again inform our listeners that if there's a particular show that you think may interest one of your friends, you can just copy and paste that particular URL of that show if you just click on it and send it to whoever you think it may be of interest to. And I'm supposing that this has been happening because we've been getting a lot of hits. And, you know, I only have a certain amount of people that I send out the information to each week. So the fact that the show itself is getting so many hits leads me to believe that our listeners are sharing the information with the rest of the world, and I really appreciate you. And at this time, I want to say how much I appreciate each person that calls in. Some people, I see the numbers here every week. Some are new, and I want to let you know how much you are appreciated. And for my loyal listener from the Bronx and another loyal listener that I know is on the board that I'm going to pipe in later on, whether she's ready or not, to tell about the give us an update on one of our former guests. But I just want to run through some of these men. Do you have anything else you wanted to say about Noel, Mr. Lay?
No, I think Jamaica benefited a lot from his presence there, and all of those important people that came around that time. It was an era, just as we are saying, we grew up in that era.
Mm-hmm. When Jamaica, it was like, you remember how they referred to the Kennedy days here as the Camelot days in the 60s?
This was a different era. And now they even mentioned some of the places that these people frequented.
Mm-hmm.
How it's not the same in appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So I leave it at that. But
yes. We grew up in the. We'll have to con a name for that era here in the U.S. Those years when you know the ladies went to a luncheon in their gloves and hat. I remember those days because I have pictures, and it's referred to as the Camelot days. So I need someone to help me, because this is supposed to be a fun show. We're having fun here while we're celebrating, enlightening, and preserving. So still relaxed and fun. So I want us to come up with a name that we grew up, when we grew up in Jamaica for that period. I remember seeing some pictures of my aunts when they were teenagers, and they would go out to parties. They were wearing gowns, you know, to a party. So it was a different, even their times was a little different from mine. We were quite sophisticated when we went out anyhow, but their period was even different. So I'm throwing it out there. So we're looking for a name for the period like we're talking about. Right, Lay?
Yeah, you know, there is a station that I listen to on the radio. It's a New York PBS station. And often they often play Noah Coward's things.
Oh, yes. I mean, he was so talented. I mean, he wrote songs, he directed plays, he wrote plays, he wrote plays that were made into movies, he acted on Broadway. I mean, the man was just all over.
Yeah.
It is really, really amazing. Of the three we're talking about, I think he had more a wider, you know, range of things that he did. He did very well.
Yeah.
Now we're going to talk a little bit about my favorite.
Oh.
Ooh. Wasn't he handsome with that sword?
Yeah, because I was going to tell you, whip out your sword.
I remember Knights of the Round Table. That was one of my favorite movies. Anyway, do you know where he was born? Tasmania.
Yeah,
in 1909. Now, what country was that then?
Australia.
Huh?
Australia.
Oh, the boy who would go on to become known as the world over as Captain Blood and Robin Hood, was once a gold prospector, a tobacco plantation manager, and a British government policeman. Did you know that about him? I didn't. I only knew him as a movie star. Once he had established himself as a bona fide Hollywood movie hero in the late 1930s to early 1940s, he also became an international property owner, purchasing land in the lush Jamaican town of Port Antonio. Flynn dubbed Port Antonio Heaven on Earth, that's what he called it, and brought his third wife, stage and screen actress Patricia Wymore, to live there with him in the 1950s. They adopted the town as their own and were often seen rafting and hosting parties after parties. Both were attracted by Port Antonio's simplicity and striking natural beauty. Now, do you know she is still alive and is there?
I wasn't sure that she's still alive.
Yes. Well, someone I know went there, I think it was last Christmas. Well, I didn't hear that she died. But they were someplace in Port Antonio that she was.
Yeah, well, she always lived there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A boutique in recent years. Earlier on, she had a farm and a quite a large house that he had willed to her.
Right, right. Well, it says here that Flynn was known to frequent local bars and down white rum.
Oh, yeah.
Sure and straight like a real Jamaican.
Yeah.
Stories about him have become a legend. Him driving his Cadillac into a pool without putting out his cigar.
He drank a lot too, you know.
Yeah, him letting a crocodile loose on the town of Montego Bay. I mean, I never heard of those things, but, you know, apparently they made news. And him gambling and winning Navy Island. Where's Navy Island? Down there?
No, it's, I think it's in the area of Runaway Bay. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but is it part of Jamaica?
Of course.
Oh, well, he won it in a gambling game.
Yeah, I to this day I couldn't figure that out, how he was able to win the island.
Well, apparently it was owned by somebody who gambled it.
I remember one time they had sold the island to somebody, whoever, and maybe it's the same person that he wanted from.
Right, right. Can you imagine that? Well, you know, it's just an island. I can put it up to give it away if I lose.
There was nothing on there. I swam over to Navy Island.
Well, I don't think it was big enough for anything, was it? I think now it's coming back to me that I might have heard about it or seen it.
You could do something with it. You could put up a house or whatever on it. But it you know, it was off. It was probably about 300 yards from the mainland.
Uh-huh.
And there's nothing on there except,
vegetation.
Vegetation.
Right. Well, they say he also had a serious side, and that showed through in his Jamaican investments in cattle, in a cattle farm, and the Titchfield Hotel, which he hoped would help to stimulate tourism in Port Antonio. Unfortunately, he died in 1959 from heart troubles before he could put any of his plans to develop the Titchfield Hotel or Navy Island into place. In the late 1960s, Titchfield Hotel was destroyed by fire. Today, only the ruins of this great landmark still stands. The government of Jamaica now owns Navy Island. So that's the information on that. But you know what? He died in 1959. You know, I remember going to the Titchfield Hotel or school or something for camping when we were, you know, little children, my girlfriend in Florida and I, in Port Antonio, and how very beautiful it was there. And I happened to have spent my honeymoon I got married in 1957, and my husband and I went there for our honeymoon. That's the last time I visited there in 1957. I wonder what it looks like now. Now, after the death of her charmed husband, rogue husband, Wymore returned to Hollywood for a brief revival of her career, during which time she appeared in Ocean's 11 with Frank Sinatra. In 1967, she came back to Jamaica for good and soon became known for her skills at cattle farming. So apparently she took over, you know, where he left off. Once even winning the title of champion farmer. Today, she continues to operate Errol Flynn Estate, breeding beef cattle and growing coconuts. In a recent interview, she confided that she's still here because the Jamaica I fell in love with as a young bride still exist in many ways. Certainly not at all. And it is that pull of the peace and tranquility that keeps me here. So that's the end of the article. As far as I know, I heard from my call it niece, is that she's still alive and well in Jamaica. And they said she looked great, you know, for...
She always looked great.
Beg your pardon?
She always looked great.
Well, you know, if I was living there, perhaps, enjoying the breezes that I remember and all the natural foods and all the things we hear are in the fruits. Remember when we did the shows on the fruits and we find out how many nutrients in one guinea? I mean, I am sure I would look great, too. If there's just something about the island, the same thing, I suppose, that they fell in love with. And the beauty of the country is still there, you know, to some extent. Because I know there's been a lot of loss of some of the trees and perhaps some of the landscape because of people building on some of the hills and all of that. But in overall, the natural beauty and the charm and the appeal of just the air, I think, is still there. And again, I want to ask any visitors on the board that would like to put to join the Lambrish, hit 1 on your telephone, and I'll see a raised hand, and I'll open up the mic to you. So feel free to do so. So, Mr. Lay from the Bronx, do you remember anything about any of the Errol Flynn films, or were you a fan?
I was a fan of Errol Flynn and Tyrone Poe. I never missed any of their films. And my mother was also a fan of more Tyrone Poe than Errol Flynn, but he was a favorite of mine, yes.
Oh, great. Well, I remember, you know, I remember that. I was more a movie buff when I was a teenager and young person than I am now. But, you know, he was just so handsome and so great with that sword. But, you know, we celebrate those times and, of course, you know, the memories, because that's all we can live on now. But they were just great times, great times. So now we're going to talk about the master, because I don't think a lot of people realize, you know, the James Bond's movies are so popular all over the world, but I don't think that most people know that they were all written in Jamaica.
Probably not.
Right. So it's interesting to me as I read about various people, you know, even those born in Jamaica or in a foreign country that had something to do with Jamaica, many of them were from privileged families, and many of them were from very poor families. Many of them were even born enslaved. So the point here is that the fact that we are talking about them one time or another is the fact that, you know, people can leave a mark on the world regardless of their circumstances. Would you agree with that, Leigh?
Definitely.
Because we talked about him, I would think, not privileged family, but it didn't seem like his mother and father were big deals. So now we're going to talk about someone that was born privileged, and that is Mr. Fleming. Because he was, and incidentally, go back to what you were saying, it was, and it's documented so we can talk about it, after his death, it was documented that Noel Coward was a homosexual.
Yeah.
It's documented all over the internet, you know, so we're not saying something that is not written about. So anyway, let's go on to Ian Fleming. He was born in 1908. And by the way, Errol Flynn was born in 1909.
Yeah, isn't that strange? And they were so close in...
Yeah, they were close together. Now, Noel was sort of much older when he got to Jamaica. He was 43. He was born in 1899, I think. Well, it's not really a lot of time in between.
Yeah.
The 18-something sound far, but it was the end, you know, 1899, so it was about 10 years. But this one was born to privilege in England in 1908. He was educated at the Military Academy at Sandhurst. Now, he was caught out past curfew. He eventually, I suppose he was kicked out and went to Austria to continue his schooling. So, you know, I'm sure it's because his parents had money, you know, where they're kicking him out one place and they can send him to another country to continue his education. It was there that...
Sandhurst, very prestigious military academy in England.
Yeah.
And you have to toe the line or else you're out.
Well, he was caught out after curfew.
Yep, that's a no-no.
And they kicked him out. So they, you know, sent him off to another country. Now, it was there that he learned German and first started writing poems and short stories. primarily for his own enjoyment, still trying to decide what he was meant to do, he attempted to join the Foreign Service. After failing the exam, he turned to journalism. He began to work with Reuters. That was a famous Reuters. And achieved
news agency,
and achieved some success covering a spy trial in Russia. After a short while, he turned to banking, which gave him the financial independence he sought. Well, he wanted to be independent from his family, I suppose. He began to exercise his love of the high life, filling his free time with women, liquor, and fast cars. Is that not similar to the rich kids now? Now, within a few years, however, he became bored with the monotony of a banker's life and began to work for the British Naval Intelligence Service at the rank of lieutenant. Now, he later became a commander and the right-hand man to one of Britain's top spies. Now, excuse me. Now, he spent World War II using his language skills, sharp wit, and creative mind, conveying ways to confuse the Germans. He assisted refugees in plotting escape routes from Nazi Germany and commanded an assault unit trained to work special intelligence missions. Now, he was a member of the team that designed a prototype for the CIA, and he also met with President Kennedy to help engineer Castro's fall from power. I mean, this man was something else. In July of 1943, he visited Jamaica for a naval conference. The British were concerned at that time about the potential presence of a Nazi U-2 boat in the Caribbean waters. Leigh, do you know I remember that?
I remember it too.
Oh my gosh, when I read that, I had goose pimples. Because I did remember it when we used to have the what do you call it, when they would fly over and the siren would go off and you had to put out all the lights. Do you remember that?
Yep.
And, you know, you couldn't even have a little lamp light going. They would knock on your gate and tell you to put it out. And we heard about the U-boats. And now to read that here, I was just so tickled. I see a hand going up at 631-451, and I'm going to, because this is a laboratory, I'm going to open up the mic. Good evening. This is Margaret in the backyard. Who do I have?
Hi, Margaret. This is Janine.
Hi. Welcome, loyal listener. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks.
Oh, great. You wanted to join the library?
Yes, sure. I'm listening to all the interesting things that you're saying, and I remember Errol Flynn and his movies, you know, and I've been trying to remember that time when they wore the hat and the gloves, and for some reason just not popping up in my mind, but they used to wear a lot of beads too.
Right. No, well, I was not speaking of myself in Jamaica at that time. I was talking about, you know, I've been here since 1959.
Right, right.
In the early 60s here in the United States,
mm-hmm.
you know, luncheons and, you know, parties and things like that
It still happens.
Pardon?
It's still happening. Anytime I go to a luncheon, I usually wear my hat. I don't really wear the gloves. I wear my hat, so it's still happening. You know, some people will still keep up the tradition and some won't.
Right. Well, I'm sure I was alluding to the fact that things were a lot more formal in the 60s.
Yes.
Because now, even now when I look at photographs of my son then, you know, he would be in a suit and just for a party.
Yes. Yes.
So my grandchildren now are not dressing like that.
No, I agree with that.
So I was making a reference to that.
Yes, yes.
So anyway, my dear, do you remember, were you in Kingston during the war time?
Well.
In the 40s?
Well,
late 40s? Or well, during 43 and all of that?
No, no. Well, I was born 1945.
Oh, okay. Well, this is before your time.
It wasn't really something that I would remember a lot.
Yes, yes. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to Fleming now. He fell in love with Jamaica when he came there in 1943. You know, he was sent there, or he came to a naval conference. But I got so... not really tickled, but, you know, the memories came back when I read about that, because I think I was always scared when the siren would go off. And when you talk to some of the generations after me and tell them that, they say, but nobody was fighting a war there, so why would they have a siren and you'd have to turn the light? But we would hear the planes going over. Lay, do you remember the planes, hearing the planes?
Yeah, well, you know, they used to have drills and all that. My father was an air raid warden.
Ah, so he was one of those that knock on your door and tell you to turn off the light.
You had your light on, he would.
Yeah, I suppose every area had one. Because I remember that my mother tried to have a little lamp and put it onto something, and they would knock on the door and tell you to turn it off. I don't know how the hell they saw it. But I was terribly afraid of the dark. And especially when you heard the planes going over, you know, and you have visions of a bomb coming down on you or something. But I'm glad somebody remembers. Anyway, back to Mr. Fleming now. He fell in love with the island's tropical beauty. Sad to leave when the time came, he told himself that he would return when the war was over and write the spy novel to end all spy novels. So this was something he planned. I thought that was, you know, very deep when I read that. Because he decided that, you know, he was always dabbling in that spy thing and that espionage thing. And he had taken up journalism. So he set his intention, even though he was just there for a convention, that he would be back, and that is where he would write, as he said, a spy novel to end all spy novels. I think, man, I was really moved by that statement. Talk about setting an intention. And as I always do, I try to encourage the people now, and especially the younger generation, that's where it starts, with an intention, a passion, a drive. So I'm hoping that all these stories that we are bringing to light, although we're concentrating on Jamaica, it doesn't matter where you're from. You know, we are all made of the same fabric, really. You know, we're humans. And there's so much likeness in us, whether we're black, white, rich, poor, born in Africa or Scandinavia. You know, there are some things that are inborn, and it shows that people from any part of the world, I believe that if they have the intention and the intent and the desire, you know, things will happen for them. So back to the story. Now, true to form, in 1946, Fleming purchased land in Arakabessa that had once been a donkey race course and designed a house he called Golden Eye. Now, Leigh, you ever heard of donkey race courses in Jamaica?
No.
Well, now we know they had one in Arakabessa. But, you know, one thing I want to remind our listeners, that the period we're talking about here, communication was not like what it is today. You know, we didn't even have television during those days. You had radio that was limited, And, of course, you always had the daily gleaner. But, you know, most times kids or younger people weren't reading the daily gleaner. So there might have been news about several things that we didn't know about because we didn't read it. And the days when we was growing up, most times children were to be seen and not heard. Anybody can relate to that phrase?
Yes, I can.
So we were always seen, but a lot of times if we even, we didn't have a lot of conversation or were included in a lot of adult conversation.
We had to walk away.
Right. So, but I never heard of a donkey race course, so I thought that was significant. Apparently it was because it must have been a big piece of land, but he called it Golden Eye. It had no hot water, no air conditioning, and no glass windows. But that was exactly how Fleming wanted it, and he began to spend every winter there and write. In 1952, at the age of 44, after his longtime girlfriend, Lady Anne Rothmere, a married woman, became pregnant, Fleming returned to Jamaica and waited for her divorce to become final. The two were later married in Port Maria, and Jamaica's neighbor, Noel Coward, was a witness to the marriage.
Was his best man.
Yeah. While waiting, Fleming made good on his promise to write the world's greatest spy novel, introducing the world to James Bond, the suave Agent 007. Ain't that something? You know, the circumstances involved. First, he goes there on a convention, and he promises himself that he's going to write this story, you know, a spy story to end all spy stories. In the meantime, he's having a little, you know, a fear that is under the cover, and something bad happens. She gets pregnant. Ain't that something? I'm telling you all these circumstances. Now, over the next 12 years, he would draw on his own experiences, his fascination with military gadgets, his sharp wit, and his dry arrogance to create the most successful action hero ever known. Though he wrote 13 James Bond movies in Jamaica, only three, Dr. No, Live and Let's Die, and The Man with the Golden Gun, had parts set on the island, especially in downtown Kingston. Negril, Frome, and Savlamar. Did you know that, Leigh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. I mean, before you researched him, you know that?
Well, I think Dr. No, a friend of mine actually got a bit part in it.
Wow.
And I won't go any further on the or elaborate on who it is.
Uh-huh.
But it was, we were all excited about that.
Mm.
And all of his spy movies.
Mm-hmm.
He used Jamaica, even if it wasn't physically there, as a setting, a visual setting.
A scenery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it worked out for him very well.
Now, he tended to name characters and places for people and places he knew, naming James Bond after the author of some classic birds of the West Indies. I read in another report that, you know, he had some time in some part in England, and his neighbor had this catalog or something about birds of the West Indies.
Yeah.
And he started to sort of have a love or, you know, foster something for the West Indies from that time. And then it so happens that he was sent there on a special assignment. and decided that that was the place he was going to come into his own, is what I would call it. Now, I'm back on the article from the Pieces of the Past that our listeners can find. It's written, it's a section of the Jamaican Gleaner history page or link. And if you just Google Pieces of the Past, you'll get there very easily. And they have, we have been discussing a lot of the stories from that segment. But here it says he paid tribute to his mother, calling the 007's boss M in 1962, and Dr. Knows, that was filmed on the island he loved. His books would be immortalized on film. So he is the one who wrote about or brought to life the character known as James Bond. Now they have, you know, they have special writers who are picking up and writing other stories. But 13 of the original stories were written while he was in Jamaica. Leigh, do you have any information you want to share about him?
Well, no, that you fell in love with the place to the extent that it was like the background for all of his spy writings.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And his wife wasn't that enthusiastic about the place.
Oh, she wasn't?
No. That's what I read.
Mm.
So, but, you know, I saw a little video when I was looking him up of his house. Mm. And it's amazing. He didn't have he didn't have any fancy desk or any fancy chair to lounge in. It was all business. It was a straight back chair. And it looked like probably a lignum vitae desk that he operated on. His gardener was showing off the place.
I got you. Yeah, from the description here, it was, you know, sort of bleak, very bleak. But it's interesting a little bit about his background. His family had an estate next door to this family, the Bond family. That's how he came up with the Bond name. And their motto was, are you ready for this? The world is not enough. That was their motto. And he that's when he was attending one of the schools, Dumford Schools, it said here. And his family had his estate, their estate, next to this Bond family estate. So I'm going back to what they mentioned about him using names from his past, you know, and people he knew and drawing. I think that is just really so creative. Now, one of the things I see here that he was involved with some spy operations during the war. You know what I mean? He never actually participated in one, but he was involved in several of the planning and, you know, came up with ways that they could engage the Germans and capture information. You know, there were always, as a matter of fact, at one time he had put together a team, and he was not in charge of the execution, but, of course, the design of the plan. So not only did he write about these things, but he actually did some of them. Isn't that, I don't mean physically do them, but, you know, but was involved of some of the things that were done during the war days in terms of spying.
His books are so good because they're actually authentic.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's unbelievable. And there again, it goes back to when a person has a passion for something and really dedicate their life to it. It's just amazing. Now, I want to remind our listeners online that if you want to interact with the Labrish, you do have to call in to 718-766-4558. And you just hit 1 on your telephone, and I will see that you want to join the Labrish and welcome you to the backyard. So I'm not able to interact with you online, but do call us or send us an email. And I'm always looking for ideas on material to use. So if there's something you want us to Labrish about, please just let us know, because I am dedicating this show to the people who love history and who might have a passion for Jamaica, a love for Jamaica. You don't have to be a Jamaican. You just have to love history or love to find out about other cultures. So if there's anything you want us to Labrish about that might be special to you, please let us know. So with that said, Lay, if there isn't anything else we want to add to these three guys who fell in love with Jamaica and made it their home, and one, is it only one is buried there, I think, right, Howard? Oh, okay. So, and his place is a museum now, you mentioned?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
But, you know, there are probably many more people that are not even in the entertainment field of the same caliber that took residence in Jamaica, because it was so tranquil and remote that they felt safe there at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a beautiful place to be living, or even if it was during the winter time in another part of the world, you know?
Right, right. And, you know, he was only 53 when he died. He's 56, I'm sorry. He was 56 when he died of a heart attack. So he was a heavy smoker and a heavy drinker, it mentioned here. And in 1960, he met John F. Kennedy. So, you know, he was up there with the celebrities and the notaries of the world. And the New York Times in 2008 ranked him 14th on their list of the 50 greatest British writers since 1945. So that was quite a distinction. And of course, you know, those James Bond movies will go on forever.
Yeah.
Will definitely go on forever. And they're so intriguing for the people who like spy movies. I mean, I just think they're just great.
I think I've seen each one of them about 20, 30 times.
I know. At one time when I was in Florida, I had a license plate that was 007. I didn't ask for it. I happened to have had it on my car for a long time. And then one morning I got up and it was gone. And when I went back to get another one and told them that they stole it, they said, "We're surprised it took so long." You know, for somebody to take it. I didn't even realize that I had this 007 license plate. But I suppose as I was driving by, you know, some people that were fans would recognize it. So I just thought that was really something else. So
also, I want to say a lot of women in Jamaica named their boy kids after Errol.
Oh, really?
My mother was one of them, yes.
Oh, because she was a fan?
Yes, because he was so handsome and everything. Everybody wanted to name the boy kids Errol.
Right. And the fact that he lived in Jamaica. I mean, these people not only lived, they bought cattle. They were, involved in the island in some way, or at least he planned to. His wife continued to do so, and apparently still does.
Right, right.
But, I mean, they invested, and they participated, because there's other details here of Fleming, doing things downtown Kingston and that kind of thing, engaging the people who lived in Jamaica in his films and like Leigh mentioned.
And
so it's not like they just lived there and was secluded.
No, during that time he was well known.
Right, and they engaged and participated. They got married. They had parties. They were involved.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was very, very interesting, and it just goes to show, you know, that again, we have so much to celebrate about our beautiful island, the culture as we knew it. And the fact that the beauty of the island remains, you know, that's not something you can destroy very easily.
No, you can't.
So we are out of time. So, again, I'm going to thank all the listeners on the board. I see we have a late bloomer. We have a 770941 who has joined the Labrish, and I'm going to open up the mic and welcome her. Anybody who has a hand up is always welcome. So good evening. Welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret.
Margaret, this is Donna. Just chimed in. Just want to let you know I was here.
Oh, hi there. Welcome to the Labrish.
Hi, Donna.
I'm still Georgia. I'm not in the Bronx.
Okay, yes. What part of Georgia are you? Would you tell the world again?
Austell, Georgia, home of Six Flags.
Okay. You know, most people think all of Georgia is one place, Atlanta.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's one of the first things that comes to their mind. So like in the old days, Jamaicans, everybody, if you traveled, people would say they're from Kingston, even if they're not. Because
yeah, and I also have a friend listening in.
You do? Wonderful. Well, we want to welcome all the friends of our fans that may be listening online or on the board. We want to just welcome you to the backyard and to tell you that we're here every Wednesday, and we labrish about things that we can celebrate, enlighten, and preserve about the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. And over our soon-to-be 2 years, we have covered a lot of subjects, events, people, places, and we're just having a ball and rolling right along. So if there's something special you'd like us to enlighten you about or to celebrate with you, as long as it's positive and something we want to preserve, please let us know. So, again, to all my loyal fans on the board with their hands up,
Margaret,
I want to thank you for being here.
Hello.
And I am very grateful for your support.
Margaret, I would like to thank everyone.
Oh, yes, please forgive me. I did want you to mention how our past guests, who we featured about 2 months ago, was it, Janine?
Yes, around that.
Aunt Gloria. I mentioned last week that she was in a coma, and now her niece, who is from Long Island, is going to give us an update on her condition.
Yes, I just want to thank everyone that prayed for her. She's in the mending. She's doing so good. She came out of the coma a couple of days after I told you on Backyard Labrish, and she's doing good, very good. And I just thank you very much for your prayers, and always God is always good. But it wasn't my aunt's time. My aunt went into the coma because she was overdosed at the hospital on morphine. And that was the reason why she went in the coma. And they tried to reverse it, and it didn't work at first, and it was just one big mix-up. And it just opened our eyes that we have to be aware of what's happening whenever we go to hospitals, because they do make mistakes. And it almost cost her her life, but my belief is when it's not your time, it's not your time, and thank God. She's doing great.
Thanks for that update, Janine, and we are just so grateful and so happy to hear that. And I want to our listeners to know, if they want to hear Aunt Gloria's segment, if they look in the archives, which is on the right-hand side of the Blog Talk page, when you go there, you will find... Is it 2 months ago that we did her, Denise?
Yes, wrong that, yes.
Yeah, so if you go to that month, you will find her segment there, and she will see that she's a 96-year-old senior who shared with us her memories of growing up in Trelawney. Is it Trelawney?
Yes, and she's 94.
94, yeah.
94.
In Jamaica during her growing up years is what we discussed in that segment. And part of what I like to do in Backyard Labrish here is to encourage the seniors or anyone with a story to share it online with the rest of the world, because we're getting a lot of hits now. You know, people are telling other people, and, you know, people can relate no matter where they're from. Sometimes there is a story that is sort of universal. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're Jamaican or Trinidadian or American or from the South or North, it doesn't matter. You know, stories can speak to the heart, to your heart or to the heart of somebody else, if they can relate to it. So we ask you to come online and share your story if you have one. And if you know of any senior with a story that is from the Jamaican culture, since that is what we're featuring here in the backyard, do let me know and I'll arrange to interview them about their memories of where they grew up and what life was like then. Because I know the young people might not be interested, or we might think they're not interested right now, but neither was I when I was young and trying to raise my kids, and my mother used to tell me stories. I didn't have time for them. But now, oh, how I wish that I could have some of her stories and hear her voice. And that's what can be done here in the backyard. Aunt Gloria's ancestors can go, her great-grandchildren will be able to go on Google and put in her name, and her segment on Blog Talk Labrish will come up, and they can hear her voice. So those of you who want to share that, just let me know, and I'll make the arrangements. So with that said, does any of my listeners have anything else to say before we close the Labrish today?
Good night from the Bronx.
Okay, home of the New York Yankees. Anybody else? Good night, Mr. Lay.
Good night from Austell, Georgia.
Okay, Austell, Georgia, you're up the road from me, and thank you for stopping in the backyard this evening. Did you get a whiff of the breeze?
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Oh, great. Fantastic. Next time we'll get you a mango. A special Jamaican mango, not just anyone. Okay, Miss Janine?
Yes, it was nice again.
All right.
Always nice to be a part of Backyard Labrish.
Well, thank you so much, darling.
I look forward to it next week.
Definitely. So we ask you all to visit with us next week, and, of course, share our link with your friends and family that you think might be interested in the Labrish. So good night until next Wednesday at the same time. As I always say, make it a great week. Bye.
God bless. Bye.
Thank you.